Driving the Culture Forward. This is Hypebeast Radio. My name is Ben Rosen.
I'm Madre Stinney.
And today we are here with Scott Sternberg of Entire World, previously the creative director and designer at Band of Outsiders, industry vet, industry legend. We are so glad that you could find some time on your way over to New York. How are you doing, man? How is everything?
Dude, I'm good. I'm rolling. There's so much going on.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple weeks for you, right?
Yeah.
Entire World just launched, what, 2 weeks ago? Last week, I think?
Last week.
And how's it been so far? This has been like kind of a new thing for you, sort of like, what's sort of the intro? How did that brand get started?
Sure. Yeah, no, I mean, I've been, it's been in gestation, if you will, for over 2 years. So the last week isn't much different because I've been living with this product and this brand, and I'm working with pretty much the same core team as Band of Outsiders, but all of a sudden everybody's looking at everything you're doing. Mm-hmm. So it takes on a different kind of patina, and the speed, like I feel the earth moving under my feet. But in terms of the where it all got started, you know, Band of Outsiders kind of went to shit, and I had this idea in my head even before the end of band that wouldn't all of this make a lot more sense if we kind of stripped away the artificiality of where the pricing was, how we shipped the product, everything that sort of fit into that existing fashion system, that wholesale system, which is a great system, but it never felt right for band. So I've been thinking about this forever. And when I stopped doing band, I just wanted to chill out. I didn't really want to do much other than consult and design, but design for other people, which I'd never really done before, which is a totally different thing than being a founder, creative director.
Right.
And let that process inform whatever was going to be next as well. Because when you get away from it being so personal, mm-hmm. You can really hone a lot of things. Not everything you put out is an expression of you, but it's you're helping a client or whatever. So I became a better designer through that, traveled a lot, and then started really slowly and deliberately putting together all the pieces that would make an entire world. And the reality of doing a business like this is it's so much more work and takes so much more money than just starting a wholesale business. So in addition to putting the clothes together, which is super important, you have to put everything else together. What wholesale and the fashion system gives you is a framework through which to sell and communicate ideas, fashion week, markets, press previews, all that stuff. Without that structure, we really have to create the framework and everything that lays on top of it. So the clothes, the photography, the content, the imagery, all that stuff. So I've just been working my butt off for 2 years trying to pull this together.
Right. And you mentioned that it was like a really small core team. I think the website brags that you guys have, what, 7 people
yeah.
in total?
Yeah.
And so how do you build that infrastructure with such a small team? Is it kind of like a lean startup, basically?
It is exactly a lean startup. And really, I was just freelancing people last year here and there to help because you know, that startup mentality is basically let's just get this going. We got to get this going. We got to get this out there. We got to sell some of this stuff. What do we have to do that? Anything extraneous falls away. And it's a wonderful kind of auto-focus feature, like not having a lot of money, not having a lot of time or resources. So, and because it's everybody was from my core band team except for one guy, there's a shorthand with all of us. And these are people that don't let me get away with bullshit. So you save a lot of time that way. You know, typically, or not typically, but in a lot of creative environments, when there's a founder, there's a creative director, there's a cult of personality around them, there's a pile of eggshells around them that everybody's tiptoeing on. None of that exists in my world and my team. So, you know, in terms of decision-making is incredibly fluid and fast. You know, I hate using the word content. It sounds like meat or something. But, you know, sort of making images, generating and executing ideas, the process of that isn't necessarily easy, but there's just a sort of shorthand and we're able to sort of just do stuff. So there's, you know, to one extent, every man for himself, you know, graphic design, product design, customer service, marketing, communications, etc. But to another extent, we all just sort of do everything together. It all sort of bleeds. So the customer service guy, Ashwin, who worked for me for years, writes all the copy, which makes a lot of sense because he's communicating what the product is. And he's also talking to all the customers about that stuff. And then he's talking to me all the time about the clothes, because he's such a, he's not a dandy, he's sort of like the opposite, whatever a Band of Outsiders dandy would be. He's really into clothes. Giving me feedback on that in a fitting, which ultimately will lead to a better understanding of the product when he talks to the customer. So the seven person thing actually, I think, works to our advantage.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask, just like, you know, how much has your perspective changed since Band of Outsiders? I know, like, with Entire World, you mentioned the word democratic. Like, could you expound on that and just, like, talk about, like, your vision for what a brand means in 2018?
Yeah, that's a big question. I mean, I think a brand has the potential to be exceptionally meaningful right now. I think, I don't want to get political, but there is a feeling... there's a democratization of information, right? The gatekeepers of the media industry, for example, publishing, it's all leveled out. So I'm here at Hypebeast, a company that 5, 6, 7 years ago might have been seen as a little sort of side player, but now you are, you know, at the front line of what a media brand is, like for menswear, like you represent, and women's for that matter. You represent something much bigger. And you've done that through digital media, through this democratized media, right? And the same thing has sort of happened across the board, big brands, small brands, governments, you know, who is the power structure now? Who do people look to for direction, ideas, all that stuff? And I think just hopefully to some extent we'll be able to look towards our government at some point again to do that. We certainly look to celebrities to do that, and we look to each other, and we look to brands. So I think there's an incredible significance potentially behind what a brand could be in somebody's life.
And I actually liked it because a lot of the initial press that I think Entire World saw was like the comparison that I saw as kind of obvious was like people were like, oh, this is like an American Apparel kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I liked, for example, like GQ Style had a pretty good profile interview piece with you where you said that it was like, no, like if you look at it, the DNA of the brand is a lot more of these world builders, basically, kind of like the Elon Musk and stuff. Is that sort of how you feel about it?
No doubt.
Like you were looking at bigger things. You didn't really want to just make like, this is another hoodie brand, obviously. Like you kind of aim higher than that.
No doubt. I mean, it's just not a product-driven brand, right? Mm-hmm. It's the product to me, at the end of the day, has to be completely awesome. That's just table stakes. Like if it's not, don't make it.
Right.
Don't do this. There's no
reason.
Don't
waste your time.
Don't waste anybody's time. Don't waste the fabric. Don't waste the you know, it's unsustainable and everything in between. It's just not worth it. So you get the product down. To me, what's exciting is, these captains of industry, these dreamers who dare to dream bigger than any of us can dream and who talk about ideas like Utopia, right? Like what a lovely
concept.
Cool, big concept to think about. Democracy, democratization, which is just the idea that this isn't the cheapest thing in the world. This isn't because it can't be if it's going to be a good product, but it is accessible and it's understandable. And from a fit perspective, it's something that every piece isn't made for everybody, but there's something everybody can get something out of some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And that's important to me. The American Apparel reference from a product perspective, and honestly, even from a brand perspective, even though he stood for something different at a different time. I love that store. That was a movement. That was something, right?
Yeah.
And I don't even know how many years ago that was. It was over 10 years ago. But when it was in LA, it was exciting to go into that store on a Saturday. You would see people you knew. You could pick something up. It wasn't that expensive if you felt good about it. Honestly, until Entire World, my entire sock and underwear drawer was always American Apparel. I liked that it was all cotton. I liked that it was American. It was honest, all that stuff. And it was cheap. You know, it was too expensive for the quality, but it was cheap enough that it was a holistic experience that I could make sense of and enjoy, and I liked the product. So people, it's funny, they've been sheepish to me mentioning American Apparel, and I'm like, no, this is a great American brand that imploded.
I also see a lot of like Patagonia almost.
Yeah.
I see a lot of like these brands where, like you said, it may not be super affordable, but there's almost an explanation built into it why this t-shirt costs that certain.
Yeah, well, you create this, you have to do this. I mean, it's if you're going to price yourself just against the market, which is what the wholesale world is, that's how right. you sort of position yourself. And it's helpful, really, to start getting started out. If you're going to price yourself that way, you're always going to be sort of stuck, I think, in a price game, and price being tagged to your brand, tagged to the product, being something that you're always talking about to get people to buy it. If you can create a sense of logic within a universe where everything makes sense next to each other, that I think is a way to build a long-term customer, like a base of people, a following, a cult, whatever you call it, that as long as there's consistency there and integrity there, that made more sense to me this time. Because like with Band, we got caught, and it was somewhat deliberate. I knew I had to make expensive clothes for anybody to pay attention to me. It was the only way to make things at a low quantity when you first get started out. But we just kept getting trapped into these price buckets. So like I made suits essentially for Barney's, who was my biggest menswear customer at the time. And we made them in the States. I was selling to Barney's designers. So I made a decision, let's make just the suit I totally believe in. Man, that was an expensive suit. And I just saw myself in a price bucket that I didn't belong, you know, it didn't make sense. And I think that's when we started to get a lot of customers, but ultimately lose, in a way, what that brand was supposed to become.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like you said, it's a really fine line to tiptoe, because it's like, I think my first exposure to a lot of Band, even back then, was like, you guys were one of those brands that got name drops in rap songs for a while. And so I was like, well, I would definitely like a Band of Outsiders cardigan. I want to be as cool as Childish Gambino. Then I Googled it, and it was like a, you know, $700 cardigan. And I was like, well, shit, I'm in high school. There's no way, you know? But like, that seems to be one of those things where it's like, yes, you want to be expensive enough that rappers want to say your name, but you don't want to be so expensive that the people that are listening to that rap song can't afford it.
Or is there any way to do both? Maybe, not sure. I mean, I think that with Entire World, I think it's certain. Listen, it's certainly you never set out to say, I want these guys to rap about my clothing at all. But what we're trying to do, whether it picks up on that wavelength or if it just picks up on the customer wavelength, is never think about the fact that a $25 t-shirt, a $30 t-shirt, a $20 pair of underwear should receive any less love in terms of product design, in terms of quality, and any less romance in terms of brand and narrative and story than a $200 pair of underwear or a $300 shirt or whatever it is. That was really the gap I felt at Band, I get it. Something is more desirable because it's more expensive, just straight up. But like, can't we just do away with that a little bit? Isn't where we're at right now, and getting back to democratization of information and every transparency and everybody sort of understanding and seeing where everything comes from, could this be possible, you know?
And to go back to Band for a minute, because you mentioned the whole like when Band went to shit period of your career, and I've read some stories about it, but I would rather hear it from, you know, the God's mouth on this one. So it was, you guys needed funding. What exactly happened? Because the brand is still alive. The brand still exists. You're just not involved at all.
I am not involved at all. It seems to be, you know, sort of like a low frequency sort of heartbeat situation. I don't know. The macro of Band was, this was a brand that tried to grow at the wrong time with the wrong set of resources. Okay, so we experienced this like crazy surge of sales. It was great. Men's, then we layered on women's, that, I mean, that's a whole different game, right? Like, there's just way more women buying clothes. So we really saw, things were going so fast.
There were two women's lines, right?
Yeah, I mean, at a point I had this concept, which, you know, this I think was really the beginning of the end, where I had Band, which was this sort of core Brooks Brothers boys department uniform for adults. This is not a polo shirt, which was sort of about, you know, clothes that were made for sport that nobody actually plays a sport in anymore. That was the concept behind that, and how those have become iconic items and was meant to be a little cheaper. And then with women's, there was boy and girl. And boy, it's very obvious what those two things were. Part of our growth plan in 2012, when I started to raise money, which I ultimately took in 2014, was to combine all these into like one mega Band of Outsiders brand. That's what investors seem to want to hear. But that was a mistake, because those were awesome and those were a perfect, you know, extension of really what this brand was about, which was something kind of small and personal. So there was a surge of sales and interest, and I was desperate to get a CEO or a business leader, whatever you want to call him or her. And I looked through three different like top industry recruiters. I could not get anybody to move to LA. It was nuts. It was super hard.
And this is a different time, when this is probably like before there were all these West Coast fashion brands that kind of.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that, and the people I was looking at, which who could or could not have been the right people, were pretty entrenched in the industry. They're working for major companies. So, and they were older, they had families. So it's like a, you know, I get it. It was a big deal, but it was mental. Like we really, I was down the road with several people and they were all ready to move, and then meltdown, breakdown. So, you know, that was number one. I finally did raise money and I did hire a couple senior people. I raised about $5 million, which sounds like a lot of money. To me, it sounded like a lot of money. But what we wanted to do at the time was put a layer of upper level management into the company so I could really focus on the creative, because I was doing everything. It was bonkers. And to start footwear, because we had so much success with Sperry Topsider, and open a store in New York. So, and of course, to combine these lines and expand the wholesale business with this sort of more emboldened single brand approach. So what happened was, this was 2014. Of course, the industry had started like from going like slow growth to like this for everybody on a macro level, right? So we're on radio, so my hand is pointing down to flat. And, you know, so when you're trying to grow that way and you're consolidating four lines into two, we basically flattened out our last 3 years of business. So when you have a growth plan and you're trying to grow and you're not growing and you're spending all this money, you're eventually going to have to raise more money. Yeah. Now, this is kind of totally a normal thing, right? We had been a profitable company for some time. But when I went out to raise money again, I had fired those people that didn't work out because they were just a waste of space.
The upper management people?
Yeah.
Okay.
They sucked. And they, you know, really, I was, any of these sort of red flags of, hey, you know, Scott, so sales went up this season, but only like 15%. And we were really budgeting for 25% because that was the commitment we got from the retailers. But it's not just us. It's an industry trend, blah, 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 blah. I never got that information. You know, it was the eggshells that I referred to before.
Right.
That were, you know, it went from a very tight-knit company to this cult of personality around me. I was referred to in the third person by my employees, you know, that sort of. I could hear in the room, like, well, Scott would want this or Scott would want that. It's like, I'm right here, people. Let's work through this a little quicker.
Yeah.
So the wrong resources were the people. We didn't have enough money. The wrong time wasn't a great time for the industry. And instead of like pulling back when we should have, we just kept pushing forward. We tried to open the store. We had a store in Japan, but that was through a partner, so it was a little different. And ultimately, we needed more money. And when the retail industry is getting really bad press, and overall it's not a great investment, you know, sort of target, and you're negative EBITDA, and you're going out to raise money, it's going to be really fucking hard. So we looked for money, private equity, all these people, and we ended up taking money through what's called a convertible note, which is basically a loan that converts to equity from this Belgian company. And in between the period of when it converted, when it was when the note was written, when the loan was given, to when it was supposed to convert into equity, into a much larger investment, the conditions under which, you know, the investment was supposed to take place completely changed, to the point where it was very clear to me that this was never going to work. There was no point in giving this any bit of a chance. And I had to leave. I had to take off. The wow. End.
Wow. And so I think when the entire world press releases and all that stuff came out, I was like, naturally, I'm like looking for a lineage between the two companies. You know, like, you want to find the connecting factor. And as far as product goes, I think it kind of makes sense. I think that there's like, Band always had this like respect for American staples and like wardrobe essentials and things like that. Like, yeah, you took boat shoes, but you turned them inside out. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. And Entire World seems to be somewhat similar to that in terms of like, these are the staples. This is what you should be wearing in a good way. What has changed in terms of the environment that you're bringing it into? Like, I get that. I feel like now it's definitely one of those things where brick and mortar people are like you said, bad press for that entire industry, almost for wholesale retail, I would say. Is that like, so Entire World is a reaction to those external factors or?
No, I mean, it was really, listen, there was a total acknowledgement that this was going on in the industry, and it felt very obvious and natural because internally, me, my tight-knit group of colleagues and or employees or whatever, like, we knew that none of this rang true, the way things were selling, the way things were going. So Entire World, really, it still came from a internal place. It didn't come, but with a complete acknowledgement of like, this is the right time to sort of do this on our own. You know, from a product perspective, Band had a bit of irony to it. The inside out boat shoe, this is not a polo shirt, the logo that was said logo with the in parenthetical. Looking at where the market was at, where streetwear starting to sort of take over menswear in terms of luxury, right? Off-White, Virgil, this whole sort of, you have Vetements especially, like this hyper-irony. It was really clear to me, personally, I was not in an ironic place or a cynical place at all. Not that that's where it came from. At Band, at Band, it was a naive irony. It was looking at clothes in a deliberately naive way, being a sort of self-taught designer. So of course the logo would just say logo, or of course the first thing I would do with a polo shirt or a boat shoe would be to turn it inside out and examine it, right? And do that along with the customer, right? As they're looking at it. But with Entire World as a reaction to just so much graphic treatment, so much irony out there. Personally, I just didn't want to see it anymore. I wanted maybe audaciously to contrast that with something super pure, hyper pure, just really a straight up great t-shirt. Wow, you know, like that's it. Like there's a few logo treatments on a few things, but can you create a sense of desire around something because it's just what you need, it's just what you want without all that other stuff. That was really interesting to me. That felt like a big design challenge.
Yeah, and earlier you mentioned about like, you know, shifting the focus from basically price points to the narrative or like the story of a product.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get like your thoughts on that as well, just within like the current climate where, you know, in consumerism, where a lot of it is focused on like, you know, price points, where the most expensive product is the most sought after product. Like, how do you switch the people back to like, you know, focusing on the actual like real interest at hand?
It's a good question, because on the high end you have, you know, you just have this like luxury industry that's taken hold, and rightfully so. I mean, it's a tried and true thing, and it, you know, they're making cool, exciting things. And on the other end, you have the disasters, you know, J. Crew, Gap, just missing the mark beyond belief, and these huge legacy organizations, like, how are they ever going to get this together and actually connect to people, right? And you have, like, Everlane, which is just, like, not exciting. So yeah, how do you do that? I mean, I think that you don't do it in a week is the first answer. You kind of like step back and you have the patience and remembering how Band was built, which is just consistently put out imagery and ideas around this product that are true to what I'm feeling, right? And communicate that in the most direct and authentic way possible. Listen to how people are reacting to it and keep doing it over and over and over again. Let people discover it. Let them tell their friends about it. I mean, the beauty of, and this is obvious shit, but like the beauty of social media, you know, Band was not started in the era of social media. There was not even Facebook when we started. So the beauty of this now, from day one, having that as a tool, it's at once horrifying, the transparency. Everybody can see exactly how many people are interested at any given point in time, who likes what or doesn't or whatever. But it is so empowering. It's so cool. Because I'm not doing this in a bubble. Not only do I not have the gatekeepers of retail keeping all this information from me, or the gatekeepers of the media filtering imagery through them to get out to people. Mm-hmm. It's just right there. So to me, it's just this, it's this constant long-term narrative that we're telling. And for Entire World versus Band, Band was super precious in a good way. But like people would say twee, which I love, I don't care. But like it was a little twee. It was very precious. It was very thought out, everything. This has an incredibly tight brand ethos that everybody in the studio gets and knows. And like this video that we put out to launch the brand was essentially a PowerPoint presentation that I was showing everybody, investors, employees, partners, freelancers, whatever, just get them on board, get them. And I would play the PowerPoint to the same music or a Brian Eno version of that music. So people start feeling this brand, right? I think that, we just got to stick to that. And we got to stick to that in a way different from Band, where Entire World's very much about iteration and experimentation. So it's a lot looser. Like what you see on Instagram this week needs to tie to what you see on Instagram next week, but it doesn't need to be the same thing. It can be a riff on that. And whatever we riff on three times in a row is going to lead to something different, but it's still honest and true and authentic because it started somewhere else that was ours. Whereas at Band, every campaign was a Polaroid campaign for 10 years, and they were rad, and it was good. But I don't know, I'm a little looser with that stuff now. So we'll see how it works out. But combination of kind of transparent experimentation and totally sticking to our guns in terms of what the brand ethos is.
Do you feel like you'll shy away from Polaroid campaigns and the entire, like, I feel like there's got to be some parts of the Band brand, for lack of a better word, that now you're kind of like, we're shooting only digital photos, we're not doing Polaroid. What about brick, like obviously the brick and mortar was like, no, we'll do online.
Yeah, listen, online I think is just the way to start, right? Like I think that eventually we'll see that there are a bunch of wacky ideas for wholesale pop-ups and stuff like that that I think can be, could be, will be great for the brand. It's another touch point. It's another way to get people to feel it, right? So that, you know, no rules there. And in, you know, in terms of staying away from stuff, I mean, there's a campaign that we're going to put out in a couple weeks, which is why I'm here. I was shooting one of them. But it sort of picks up the threads of what the Polaroids were, but it totally different tools that are digital. But they aren't like new digital tools. Mm-hmm. So I think that with Band, it was very nostalgic.
Right, yeah.
And it really was. That's part of the twee and the sweetness of all of it. I'm 43 years old at this point. Somehow nostalgia has left me. I'm much more interested in just, again, like experimentation and working through ideas and not shooting stuff on film, for sure. Like it makes zero sense to me. I'm more interested in sort of speed and, yeah, like working through stuff.
Now, as far as like current contemporary streetwear stuff goes, you mentioned Vetements, you mentioned Virgil. We've been talking about this whole Vetements thing for the past couple of weeks because of the whole, like, has that bubble burst. Are you a fan of Vetements? Are you like, I don't know if I get the joke, is basically my.
Yeah, listen, I'm kind of a fan of everything. And I don't mean that as a cop out, but I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, looking for any window into the world that was not Dayton, Ohio, right? where I could see myself somewhere in the world, because I didn't see myself there. And one of those windows was fashion. It was watching like Elsa Clench, this old host of CNN Style, and all these ridiculous fashion shows that had nothing to do with my personal aesthetic. But I started at that point and continued to, through shopping and traveling over the years, starting to appreciate fashion design as just good design and just being interested in a lot of different elements of it. I think with Vetements, I think that there's a lot of product that I love, right? I think it's cool. And then there's also a feeling that this doesn't feel like you love your customer or respect your customer. It doesn't feel like you're actually thinking of your customer necessarily, but I don't know. I mean, listen, it's part of the nature of the beast of the industry is that it's fashion. It's about the now. And the now won't always be the same thing, right? You're always going to cycle through a brand like Vetements. It's not built to last in a way. It's not looking for customer loyalty. It's ephemeral by nature. But I don't hate it. I think it's kind of cool.
What I found out to be, like, I think most interesting from, you know, just that interaction of Demna, like, responding, you know, to, like, the media was the fact that I think for the first time in a while, it's became more apparent that, like, you know, just the interaction between the media, the brand, and then also the consumer is a lot more, like, you know, just on one level where you can see that direct effect there. I just want to get your thoughts, like, you know, just having a brand now in today's time, like, are you conscious of that? Like,
are you reading the comment sections?
Oh my God. You know, listen, the hate beast comment sections over the years, I have learned not personally to read because not that I'm all sensitive. I'm much more empathic the other way. I feel other people's pain and my pain I can compartmentalize or minimize.
So you read a hater's comment and you're like, who hurt you, man?
Yeah. What happened to you? I'm feeling for you. You sad little guy. But no, it's usually it's not so productive. I do like a good summary of, like, if there is something, like, okay, well, what are people feeling? Let's know. No big deal. It's what's hard to suss through is I still think somehow within this culture of feedback, you know, right, where a customer or a fan can give their opinion and it's not a DM. It's out there for everybody. It still feels nascent. It still feels new. And I think everybody's still working through the responsibility that they have with that power to give feedback, to just, like, maybe you don't have to be a dick about it. Yeah. Or maybe this could be more constructive. Maybe this could be a dialogue versus something that's kind of hateful or full of vitriol or whatever. But I think it's all really interesting, and I think it's tricky right now.
I think we tried to introduce that, like, when we tried to make it so that you could comment on articles using your Facebook account as well as your like Discuss account. And I don't think anybody chooses to use Facebook and have their name and face attached to the things that they're willing to say about people, especially on Hypebeast, because, like, people say some fucked up shit.
It is funny. It's funny. I mean,
And like, that's the thing, is now people will read certain articles only for the comments. And we know that. Like, there's definitely, like, 64 comments? I'm going to read every single one.
Yeah, know? No, I mean, they go there. I don't know where this will evolve and what this will evolve into. I'm curious. I don't think this is it. It still feels like we're in, like, stage two or something.
Yeah, the growing pains stage of, like, how we're using it. Yeah, because I think that, like, if everybody were forced to be accountable, none of them would be critical. It would just be, like, Instagram comments where people are super positive and just, like, two hands up emoji to everything.
Yeah, yeah. And do you enable emojis on your comments? Is that possible?
I believe so, yeah.
Maybe you should switch it so it's only emoji comment.
That'd be great.
Plus or minus.
Like, I mean, no, you can, like, go full. You can have, like, crazy faces and all that shit.
None of the language.
Yeah, just no
words. I told my mom to stop reading the comments, like, years ago. I literally was like, please don't. It's never going to be a positive experience for you.
I actually think, on the subject of mothers, my mom has gone in there and had fights with some of the comments.
On her account? Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, you know what? I gave that up so many years ago. She's all over the entire world Instagram. Like,
are you serious?
Like, Mom, I have customer service people who will reply to them and tell them how the sizing works. But thank you.
That's so sweet.
It's very sweet.
But yeah, I think on a much more like serious note, I do think that, like, you know, just the influence of like social media and how that can, like, you know, affect the brand. I feel like a lot more brands are being, like, you know, more hyper aware of that situation, where you can just see, like, you know, how much the influence of, like, I guess the general public's opinion can influence like a decision like Virgil being appointed to like Louis Vuitton, where you can see that direct effect. So, I mean, you know, what are your thoughts on, like, you know, that shift there? How does that affect, like, you know, streetwear, just like, you know, just modern day brands that aren't on that high fashion level?
I think on a positive back to democratization. I mean, how cool, right? Virgil at Vuitton, how cool, right? I mean, mm-hmm. And how else would it have happened?
Right.
I think it's great. I think with, you know, who's the superhero? With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
Batman or Superman or something. I think that it's just a double-edged sword. So it can be incredibly positive, and it can keep a brand on its toes, and it can even enable a brand to grow through just information and feedback, like anecdotal, not data, but like, here's what people are feeling. But the flip side is listening to stuff too much and losing your way. And, you know, this sort of balance of being, you know, when I got into fashion, it was one of the things that I thought was so cool and appealing about it is that one thing that fashion is about creating a sense of desire around a product and almost not dictating what people should wear or what they want, but leading them in that direction and not in a brainwashing sort of way. But it's a cool sort of cultural wave that fashion designers can create, can initiate, unlike other, you know, mediums like entertainment and stuff like that, perhaps, because people are wearing this stuff. And then the flip side is we're in the age of data and feedback and commentary and feedback, and listening to that and letting that inform you and informing that direction. I think it's just a balance, because we don't want to lose this. You know, I love walking into a store and seeing, like, what's Dries feeling right now? I'm into Dries. I want to feel what he's feeling. I don't want to feel what he thinks everybody wants him to be feeling after reading a million comments. But I also love seeing Virgil at Vuitton, so.
Yeah. I also had a question, like, what do you feel inspires an American brand? I feel like, you know, for the consumer, like, when I think European brands, I think luxury. When I think Japanese brands, I think craftsmanship. So what do you think is, like, the core values of what makes a good American brand, like, you know, Patagonia, for instance?
It's actually a really great question. You know, I think there's a spirit of obvious, like, freedom, entrepreneurship, in America, like this feeling of possibility, like anything can kind of happen. And I think that the sort of ingenuity and sort of outside the box sort of thinking of what that can be, Ralph Lauren being the, like, ultimate example, you know, he created kind of what we were talking about before. I mean, this is the first, like, not I don't know the first, but this was mass luxury. This was, he was selling a dream, but it was something you could buy and afford. And that was a pretty novel idea, and it was combining something creative and something commerce-driven. Patagonia, that's a really profitable big company that's also selling an idea that's way bigger than what they're about. And I think there's plenty of American brands that are sort of stuck in the past. They're selling heritage, which is okay, but haven't figured out their way towards the future, like a Levi's being an example of something like that. I think the reality of America, when you try to put it in a bucket, the beauty of this place, of this country, is that it's a mishmash. It is the melting pot, and in terms of the population, but I would extend that to a set of brands, fashion and otherwise. It's hard to find a through line other than this sort of, like, spirit of possibility.
Ambition, freedom, heritage, like the kind of, yeah, it is almost like the freedom, pursuit of happiness kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, a really good label that I liked for Entire World was, you know, labeling it as a startup, because I do feel like, you know, just to be a modern day brand, that you do have to have like an all encompassing perspective for your brand, where it's a lot more than just clothing. And I think like tying it back to like, you know, just having a bigger vision than just like heritage, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And also like, I think it's cool. I think it's cool to try to, like, for me, it's exciting. Like, well, I could fucking fall on my face, but it's a pretty ambitious project. And it's one that we're starting from ground zero here, with everybody getting on board from there, from that point, and seeing it, this sort of origin, and being part of that startup story, you know? I think that's super cool and super exciting, and slightly horrifying too.
I have a complete left turn question. In our, you know, deep dive research, I found a video where a younger, I don't know who he was working for at the time, but a young Donald Glover is interviewing you.
Yeah.
Backstage at a fashion show. And one of his questions is about cookies. You used to run a cookie blog?
Yes.
See, this is where I get like really investigative. What?
Yeah. So I...
That's right. You won't get that on any of your other
videos. That is good. That's a good dig. That interview is, that was a show in fall 2011. So it was in.
And you started with a Spider-Man thing, which is the superhero from earlier.
Yeah, that full circle. No, that was a sick show. It opened with five rock climbers falling from the ceiling or rappelling from the ceiling. Kanye was there, the whole thing. Okay, so the cookie blog was called If You Don't Like Cookies, You Might Not Have a Soul. I was hiking with two friends in L.A., Alex Israel, who's become a very well-known artist since that time, our friend Bettina, and we were talking about cookies. It was the most banal conversation we found so much joy in it, though, like just talking about like cookies. And it was a time where blogs were how somebody like me would have a relationship with my customer, you know, with the people, because Instagram wasn't around. And I like to write. And so I started, I'm like, this is my blog. It's not about like backstage at a fashion show. It's about cookies. And so I got like really deep into cookies. Remington Guest, who has a brand now called Advisory Board Crystals, he was like always a guest editor on it. He was my looks model back in the day. He worked for our showroom in New York too. Momofuku, I know David Chang, and Tosi, who does Milk Bar, she got involved. So at every show, we would have a cookie on the seat before people came. It was like a whole cookie thing. It was part of our brand.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Now, you mentioned a well-noted, like, you know, supporter of Band of Outsiders, Kanye West, very early on. Have you been able to catch up, like, with what he's doing with the Yeezy season and, like, just the Californian inspiration with that brand?
I love what they do. I'm super into it. I've always loved it. I mean, I talked to him back in the day a lot. I mean, even before that show, he was going to do something called Pastel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he wasn't sure if it was a store or if it was a brand and if it was collabs or what it was, and he was sort of working it out. And I think at that point he was thinking about it in terms of I like what you're doing. I like what Kim Jones is doing, and trying to sort of figure out what it was exactly. And it didn't happen for whatever reason. I don't know. We lost touch. But with Yeezy, when that came out, it's so clear what it is, and it's so, to me, quite original. I love the shows. I'm into it all. I think it's really cool. I haven't seen him for a while. We have a mutual friend that I hear a little bit about him every now and then, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, going into, like, you know, a brand like Yeezy, it does, like, I guess, like, show that polarizing opposite of what, like, you know, just Californian attire can be, where it's focusing more so like on, I guess, like basics for
gym wear.
Yeah, gym wear.
Yeah, I would describe Kanye West clothes as like what you wear if you are always either going to or coming home from the gym.
Yeah. great assessment.
The dust fit.
Yeah, no. Yeah, so I mean, like, what does the future behold, I guess, for Entire World? You mentioned that you're working on a campaign currently for it.
Yeah, so there'll be a campaign if we can just finish shooting it. It was, instead of just shooting one person, it's a little bit more ambitious. Mm-hmm. I won't say more, but that'll be coming out soon. There's a drop in May and June and July, mm-hmm. and then a bigger fall one. I don't know if they're really drops, define drop as you will. But you know, it's sort of the beauty of this is we develop really close to the market, to the there's no market, to the delivery. So it's trying to sort of stay on like, okay, this is working, this is not working, and also thinking just sort of bigger in terms of the type of product and projects we want to make and be doing. So hopefully come fall, there'll be a little bit of something somewhere in terms of like a wholesale project. We're talking to a couple people. And, you know, I would say like the biggest mistake at Band was like trying to do too much too soon. So just keep perfecting what we're doing, you know?
Do you think that there's a future in the brand on like the runway and stuff? Because I know the Band had this sort of like you said, like rock climbers, cookies, there was like shows that were scavenger hunts. It was like basically like, okay, this is staid and kind of gross to sit in a room for 15 minutes or whatever. Let's have more fun with it. Are you going to experiment with that form too? Or is it?
To me, that's retail, right? Like I love a runway show, like as an attendee. It's fun to be in the room. I think it doesn't translate to like, to imagery, to two-dimensional imagery at all. I don't even think it translates to like a video. Like capturing a great theater, which is what a runway show is, if it's any good, is nearly impossible to do on film. So that's a strange format to me to think about, and always was. It's a very strange format to think about in the age of social media. Like to me, it just doesn't translate. Everybody's images look the same. Right. Flattens everything out. We saw that a long time ago. We did the shows you were talking about. They were like meta shows. We put Devendra Banhart in the Chateau Marmont for an entire day, live fed the whole thing with Vice while he went through this. I basically tortured him going from look to look, playing this sort of like rock star sort of caught in this bubble in this room. We had a scavenger hunt with these two models around New York, did the same thing as with Devendra with a model in a gallery in Paris. And these projects were cool and they did translate. To me, when I think about those now, that's retail to me, right? So if I'm going to do something conceptual, showing a new set of product, collection, if you will, why am I just doing that for a bunch of editors? Why isn't the product, because the way I'm doing this now, it should just be there for people to buy. Just put some guy, some actor in a store window for 3 days, live feed the whole thing. Put a concept around it and have people come buy shit and look at this poor guy suffering in the hot window.
It's actually a really good idea and I would go to that.
Cool. Let's do it.
All right, we'll cut that part. We'll redact that. We'll make sure Jade audios that out. Yeah, exactly. And usually one of the notes we like to try and end on is kind of like this hypothetical scenario where if you could travel back in time and offer one piece of like sagely wisdom to like the 13-year-old version of yourself, what would it be and why? It could be huge. It could be the tiniest piece of advice. We've had people say like, don't jump. We've had people say.
I don't know how to articulate this, but I think it would be something around this idea that, you know, I don't want this to sound trite, but like, that you're never going to find the satisfaction you think you're going to find with that sort of the sort of obvious goals, that you're never going to feel great about the stuff that you think is going to make you feel great. So a great article after a fashion show, graduating summa cum laude, all these sort of metrics that are sort of set forth as things that should like validate you. Those are never going to be the things that validate you, those external things. That coming up with, you know, having a really strong sense of self and a really strong understanding of what feeds me, makes me happy, what gets me excited, what incites new ideas. Those are the things that matter and that drive me forward and keep me sane. The external stuff is just noise. Sometimes really nice noise. Sometimes a really hateful comment on Hypebeast. Either way, just keep driving forward.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for finding some time, man. Yeah. Thank you for stopping by the studio, the office, and open window. Anytime you want to come back and talk again.